an animal. Talks like an animal. Must be an animal. Come hear the animal. Talking animal. Talking animal.
Good morning, this is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss, broadcasting live from Irvine, California, my old stomping grounds of KUCI. More on that later. Meanwhile, my guest today is Richie Moretti, founder and director of the Turtle Hospital in Marathon, Florida. Founded by Moretti more than 25 years ago, the Turtle Hospital is a nationally known operation that helps repair and heal injured sea turtles, then returns them to the wild. Find out more about the hospital and Richie Moretti when we speak with him in a few moments here on Talking Animals. Later in today's show, we'll hear some animal songs, one about sea turtles, no less. Also want to remind you that 3 weeks from today, WMNF's winter membership drive will be underway, and that day, February 12th, I'll be raising money for the station. It's crucial for us to raise a lot of that money before February 12th, and I ask you to consider making an early pledge or donating to our tip jar. How about today? How about right now? You can do it online while you're listening to the show. Why not? I've posted a link to our tip jar on the Talking Animals Facebook page, as well as my own personal Facebook page. So you can just go to that, follow that link, and if you could help us out with $35, $50, $100, if you can swing it, it'd be a huge help and give us a running start for our usually towering fundraising task on February 12th. So we'd really appreciate that. Right now, though, let's hear an animal song. And as promised, it's about sea turtles, appropriately enough. This is Frank and Antonis with the sea turtle song on Talking Animals.
I wonder about the turtle and how she came to nest, and where the hatchling turtles go no one has ever guessed. Her laws of navigation have survived her generations, and I really like to know where it is the turtles go. And I'd like to know where the turtles go. I'd like to know what the turtles know and solve the mystery how the turtle navigates the sea. The turtle's been successful for millions of years, with no briny predators, no callipeach fears. Triassic and Jurassic, she the dinosaur outstayed. Cretaceous too, but recently man has come her way. And I'd like to know what the turtles know. I'd like to know where the turtles go and solve the mystery how the turtle navigates the sea. The nesting grounds of yesterday are what she's searching for, as she braves the crashing waves to nest upon our shore. How we would be diminished if the turtle span were finished, and man could never know where it is the turtles go. And I'd like to know where the turtles go. I'd like to know what the turtles know and solve the mystery how the turtle navigates the sea. And I'd like to know the turtle would go on plying the oceans to and fro, and her ancient mystery along the highways of the sea.
All right, that was Frank and Ann Thomas with the sea turtle song, my animal song to get us started this morning. Speaking of sea turtles, let's get into our chat with Richie, with a reminder that we invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663 or emailing us at dj@wmnf.com. Let's welcome Richie Moretti to Talking Animals. Good morning, Richie.
Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Richie. Thanks for joining us today on Talking Animals.
Well, it's nice to be here.
So let's find out about you, and I guess, you know, you've been helping sea turtles for more than 25 years. One of the things I love about doing this show is finding out what drew people to a certain cause or animal, especially when the animals they're helping, you know, aren't your garden variety animals like cats or dogs. So with you, obviously, the key question is, why sea turtles?
Well, you know, most things in my life happen accidentally. I came down to the Florida Keys to rescue people during the Mariel boat lift when they opened Cuba. And I brought down some fast boats, and they wouldn't let us rescue any refugees. But I found out most of the motels were in trouble. And I'm from New Jersey originally and a little ambitious, so I bid on about 20 motels and wound up buying one of them. It had an old saltwater pool in the back. When the motel was built in the late 40s, there was no fresh water in the Keys. So typically out by the ocean, they would dig a pit, and it would be a saltwater pool that would rise and fall with the ocean. After about 3 years of continuing my Volkswagen business, I started getting some pains in my chest. So for my 40th birthday, I decided I'll go run the motel down in the Keys. Came down with a girlfriend, Tina Brown, and we were going to do some fishing. So in the morning, we'd fish in her little boat. In the afternoon, we'd fish in my large boat. And one day, she caught a tarpon under the 7 Mile Bridge. And she couldn't decide whether she was going to take it to get its picture or let it go. And while she was making up her mind, I said, why don't we throw it in the old saltwater pool and see how well he does while you make up your mind? And that's how we wound up getting into the fish business to start with. We had a collection of a school of tarpon and snook and bonefish. We had lobster that we eat out of our hands. Well, the schools found out about that, and they asked if we would see our local schools and let them come through so they could see all the different fish and the difference between them. So I thought, well, if we're going to see children, let's teach them to be really nice to animals. We'd be out on the outer islands, and we would see starfish and conchs up on the beach. Obviously, children threw them up there. You know, adults couldn't throw a living animal up on the beach for no reason. So we started teaching children that when you take something out of the ocean, hold your breath, and when you have to breathe, put them back in the ocean. And that was through the early 80s, I think 84, 85, and all of a sudden, the kids got real excited. A cartoon came out called Ninja Turtles, and they all wanted to see a green turtle. So we asked the state if we could have a green sea turtle, and the state promptly said, no, you're endangered. You can't have one. And then they put a little caveat in, unless you do something for the turtles. And they said they needed a rehabber. I said, well, what's a rehabber? And they said, well, if a turtle gets hit by a boat, you take it to the vet, and you pay the bill, you buy the medicine, you pay the bill, you buy the food, you pay the bill, and when they're healthy, you let them go. I said, well, I can do that. I used to fix a lot of Volkswagens, so I ought to be able to fix a turtle. And that's how, that was 1,500 turtles ago that we released since then.
Wow. Well, that's, I mean, that's quite a story and quite a path. And, of course, among the many things I love is that the, in your mind, when you were first being told about, rehabbing turtles, that you immediately drew a parallel between that and rehabbing, the cars. So, that's great. Well, obviously you decided, hey, that's for me. And so how quickly did it evolve from the initial thought of, hey, we'd love to have a turtle here to show the kids, to finding out what would be required to actually have a turtle on hand, to then next thing or I don't know how next thing you know it was, but in fact, how quickly was it that you went from there to creating the hospital for sea turtles?
Well, it was a couple of different steps. We had the old saltwater pool in the back, and that was adequate for doing rehab on turtles. Well, we started just taking care of very simple ones. And, you know, I love old sayings, in for a penny, in for a pound.
Yeah.
Well, when we fixed that first turtle and took it out in the ocean and let it go, we were hooked. I mean, we found something that we could do. And, you know, when I say I worked on Volkswagens that made me ready to take care of turtles, in a way it did, because when you fixed one Volkswagen, they were pretty much all the same, so you could get really good at something. And, you know, turtles
yeah.
the same way. When you fix one, they're all very similar. Different, but very similar in design.
Well, and in fact, as you're describing this, I'm thinking, you know, at least Volkswagen Bug, you know, looks vaguely like a sea turtle.
It does. It's an amazing way some things work out. I felt yeah. like my home, you know, bent over a turtle that was almost the same shape as a Volkswagen.
There you go. It was your destiny indeed. Well, so Richie, can you give me a few snapshots of the very earliest years of the hospital? I mean, it sounded like, again, you continue to liken it to repairing Volkswagen, so there was a certain repetition and simplicity. But still, I mean, in those earliest years, it must have been obviously a bit of a learning curve. And so can you give us a little bit of the good, the bad, the ugly of getting launched on the hospital?
Absolutely. You know, the first turtles that came in were pretty simple. if they had gotten fishing line or rope tangled around their flipper. A lot of times you can exercise them and get them to use that flipper, and you could save the flipper. And sometimes we'd have to take the turtle to one of our local vets, and they would amputate the flipper. And then we would get the animal where we could see it could be, we could, you can let a turtle go with a flipper missing. They still be fine, but we had to get them up to where they were healthy enough, where we put a lobster in to make them catch and corner that lobster if they're a loggerhead. We would make sure they're able to compete before we put them back in the wild. Well, after the first year, it started to get a little more complicated. We started seeing these turtles come in with these gross on them. They look like great big tumors. And that's when life got a little more complicated. We started working with the University of Florida to find out what are these big tumors on these turtles. And as we started doing that, it got more complicated. We put in five tanks. Up to that point, we were using the old saltwater swimming pool and just, you know, fencing it in sections so we could work on the turtles. Then we started doing research to find out where these tumors were coming from. And we needed a little bit more work. We would bring a group of people in, some of them from Woods Hole, people from the University of Florida, all over the country, would fly in on the weekends and help us trying to prove this disease, whether it's infectious or what's going on with the disease. So to start with, we would take all the furniture out of one of the motel rooms and move in some equipment so we could do surgeries to remove tumors, and that we could also go ahead and make up some material that we could actually prove whether it was an infectious disease. So I think my motel guest thought that was pretty funny. And on Friday, all of a sudden, all the furniture came out of a room and a whole bunch of equipment went in. And then all these folks would show up in white coats. We'd be working on the tumors and stuff. And then come Monday, we would put all the furniture back in the room and go back to business, because the motel supported the Turtle Hospital in full for 20, 25 years.
Oh, I see. Yeah. So it was still a going concern as the hotel, even as you stepped further into to rehabbing the turtles. So we're talking about fibropapilloma, right, when we're talking about these,
yes,
these tumors?
Yes.
So, yeah, because, I mean, anyone that spent much time around sea turtles is kind of familiar with what's kind of the scourge of the sea turtle world. So as you were sort of moving stuff in and out of the rooms and sort of diagnosing and running your own tests of what it was, you know, what exactly, you know, is it, and what have you determined about it and how it spreads?
Well, one of the things I have a little liberty to do is, because I'm a Volkswagen mechanic, if I was a scientist, I would have to put this in a very, you have to accomplish something called Koch's postulate, where you can grow it out in the lab and infect an animal that grows positive for the same virus.
Mm-hmm.
Working with the University of Florida and Albert Einstein in New York, the first thing we were able to prove was it was an infectious disease. Up to that point, they didn't even know it was infectious, and that took about 2 years to show it was infectious. And then we would filter the material we were using to our only, you know, when we infect it from one animal to another, we would go ahead and make sure that there were no cells that were large enough that you could transmit. So the only thing you were moving was virus. And there were two viruses we looked at. One was a papilloma virus, and one was a herpes virus. And the last experiment we did was to affect half the sites with chloroform. And chloroform was able to, and herpes virus is an envelope virus. Papilloma is a very simple virus. And the chloroform was able to attack the envelope and thus killing the virus. So as a Volkswagen mechanic, I can say I'm dealing with a herpes virus. That's very infectious. But as a scientist, the only thing you can say is we're dealing what appears to be a virus. And of the virus would be studied, the most likely is herpes. It's a little simpler when you don't have any education.
Well, it's so interesting, because as you're saying that, I'm thinking, you know, that is, as we see over and over, like among the virtues of sort of the autodidact. I mean, you just sort of were teaching yourself, and again, you were continuing, as you had described earlier, to apply your experience as a Volkswagen mechanic. But saying, as is often the case, you sort of got to something important, scientific or medical, much faster in this manner.
Well, the simplest thing, the thing that made the difference, is we were using my money. So that made it real simple. If we had had to go ahead and submit grants to do something,
yeah,
we'd still be waiting.
Right, still be applying, yeah.
And when you have facilities like the University of Florida and Albert Einstein, everything is very complicated. They didn't believe how simple it was. We'd come up with an idea, we'd put it together, submit it to the federal government. They would agree that's a good idea. Then we would do it because we didn't have to go through that step of finding money. The nice thing was I had a motel and I had a chain of video stores, and we just took profit and everything went into the turtles, which was nice. Yeah.
Well, so you know, what's interesting is, as you describe kind of the relative simplicity of arriving at these findings, is I gather that generally a sea turtle with fibropapilloma is often facing a sort of a dire prognosis, and if I have this correct, a lot of facilities that help injured or ill sea turtles, like you do, don't take in turtles with that disease, but the sea turtle hospital obviously does. How does that work? Is it just a matter of the sea turtle hospital being better equipped, or just now more experienced in that sort of hands-on way that you conducted your own sort of experiments, or what accounts for that?
I think there's two things. One is that we were the first facility that actually started taking all of them because we wanted as much material as we could get and learn as much as we can. And yeah. in doing research over 5 or 10 years, we were able to find out a lot of things. Like originally, we tried to transmit the virus by very mechanical methods, surrounding a turtle that's naive with a bunch of animals that have it. And we were never able to see a transmission and actually transmitting cells, and we never saw a transmission. We tried so many things that didn't work that makes us feel very comfortable by handling both turtles. And as I said, the fact that we started on it early, and a lot of people, if you see it, and it would scare people to death. I mean, it's awful. But, you know, some of the things we learned, this is a very temperature-dependent disease, just like people with herpes. If they go out in the bright sun and they don't put some lip balm on, they'll break out around their lips. And if they have a fight with their boss, they may break out in some type of a virus rash. And these turtles are the same way. This disease has been around. The first time it was mentioned was in a book called Turn of the Century in Key West. And that was over 100 years ago. And, you know, as you watch the number of papers, there were some papers written by Smith and Coates. There were some researchers way back in 1938, 39. And they did a little bit of research on fibropapilloma. And they said the next thing we need to do is a transmission study to prove it's an infectious disease. And we actually continued their work that was started in 1938, working with the University of Florida. We were able to get permits to actually show it was an infectious disease. Up to that point, nobody had any idea what they were doing.
Right. And is it also that sort of research that's, I mean, it seems like the fibropapilloma has kind of changed and broadened out over the years, right? I mean, in terms of where it's found geographically and to some extent in the species, right, that are now known to contract it. You know, wasn't it strictly sort of green sea turtles initially?
Yep. Originally, it was just greens, and now it's on every species around the world and at different life cycles. We thought it was just on the adolescent turtles in the Keys, like dinner plate-sized turtles. We didn't see so many of those. And the areas that were very infected was Mosquito Lagoon and in Florida Bay and Comeone Bay in Hawaii. And one of the things they had in common was temperature.
Right. So it's like you're saying, it's the warmer regions that make this even more likely to take hold.
Exactly. And in working with the research and some of the things we found out is the disease would not transmit until the temperature was hot. And, you know, when you look at it, the years we saw that where papers were written, and when you see people studying something, they mean they're seeing it in the wild. Like in 1938, they were seeing a lot of them. In 1960, they were seeing a lot of them. And you know what's the same thing that happened at the same time? Our biggest hurricanes came through in 1938-39. And in 1960 and 1965 was Donna and Betsy that came through the Keys. You know, that was the same year people tried to study the disease because there were so many. So little by little, we're kind of get a few little glimpses of what's going on. You know, that it's temperature dependent. The years that are hotter, you have more turtles because if they get a little dose of it in the spring, sometimes we actually find it going in remission. But if it's a real long summer where the disease gets a good hold of a turtle, then you have to intervene with the turtles. And, you know, we have a couple of things that we use as guidelines. When a turtle comes in, the first thing we do, our vet, Dr. Hader, the first thing he'll do is go in with an endoscope. And if we can see any tumors on the lungs or on the inside, they never get better from that. Just like you and I, if we have a tumor somewhere, it's going to keep shooting the virus to other parts of our body, like cancer. And if we find tumors on the inside of the animal, at that point, we would not put an animal through all the surgeries to get the tumors off of it. At that point, Doug Bett, Bader, that's our vet, he would go in and take a sample, and if it comes back positive for FP, we would euthanize a turtle at that point because you wouldn't put it through all the things to get the superficial tumors off, knowing it has tumors inside that you really can't get. We've tried freezing them, but if you can see one tumor inside, we use a little TV camera to go in and look. There's others at parts that you can't see. So we found that that's one of our guidelines, actually. There's a couple of guidelines. If both eyes are completely covered with tumors and the eyes are not savable, to take an animal that's 2 years old and let it live out its life blind and putting it through all those surgeries of taking off half its skin with no hope of it, having a life. So, we have some guidelines that the ones that we save, and one of the things that we found out in the research, because we were actually transmitting the virus, we found that if a turtle gets FP and you remove all the tumors, you keep it for a year. And the reason you keep it for a year is it goes through that second hot spell. You don't know what's going on until it gets hot. You can take all the tumors off, and the turtle can look great, but you've got to keep it through a hot period to see if that virus will come back. But
sure.
Normally, after a whole year, we've actually tried to reinfect the turtle, to see if it can get it. It can't. So, like us with chicken pox, you get it once, you don't get it back. Of course, unless it comes back with shingles or something. But if they have a case of fibropapilloma and you get it all, they don't get it back, which is good. Yeah. They may be the only ones that survive out there.
Really interesting. Let me let folks know, this is Talking Animals. If you just tuned in, my guest is Richie Moretti, founder and director of the Turtle Hospital, the nationally regarded facility in Marathon, Florida. If you'd like to ask Richie a question about sea turtles or offer a comment, please call 813-239-9663 or email dj@wmnf.org. So Richie, let me switch gears a little bit just because there's so many other things about sea turtles that are interesting. And in fact, I think most of us find sea turtles kind of magical and enchanting creatures. I mean, what are two or three things about sea turtles that most of us would find surprising?
Well, I think one of the most amazing things, and I was originally from just outside of New York City, New Jersey, and while I was fishing, you catch a turtle occasionally, and the shells would have certain markings on them, and they would disappear for 9 months under the ice. And then you'd be fishing in the same place, and you catch that same turtle the next year. And, they actually get one heartbeat a day. They go down into the mud. Remember the red-eared sliders that we used to all get when we were children in that little round tank?
Sure.
That they'd sell at every store with a palm tree in the top of the tank?
Right.
The most common turtle, the red-eared sliders, they used to sell them at every pet store. And I think they were 50 cents or a dollar. And as I said, and that's why they're everywhere. But those little turtles will live. They live over 100 years as well. And the neat thing is, though, that they can swim down under the mud and stay there for 9 months without breathing and just by having one heartbeat a day. And our sea turtles are absolutely amazing. First thing that's amazing is that when they're hatched on the beach, they know to wait till it's night to come out. They came out in the daytime. Birds and fish would take them all. As it is, only 1 out of 100 when a nest hatches. To get one up to mating size, it's 1 out of 100 that'll actually get big enough to reproduce. And it takes 25 years. These turtles, all these little tiny sea turtles, any of them that survive will live well over 100 years. But the amazing thing is they wait till at night and they swim out. The little loggerheads swim about 0.8 mile an hour. And the greens swim about 1 mile an hour. So they'll leave the shore at night. And by daybreak, they'll be 15 miles offshore, and by the end of the day, they'll be 20 miles offshore. They'll get out there and find the wheat vine, and that'll be part of their habitat. You know, they'll go drifting around the southern part of the hemisphere, and like they leave the Florida Keys, they go up the coast, they get to North Carolina. If they're in the furthest edge of the Gulf Stream, they'll make a turn to the Azores, and then they'll start their life cycle. But when they come back on shore, you know, these turtles don't chat to each other. They're solitary animals. The only time they get together is for a few minutes, 2 weeks before the females come up on the beach. But when the female comes up on the beach, she'll dig down and she'll hit water. And then you'll see her stop, and then she'll go further up on the beach and dig a hole. How does this animal know, first, how to get back on the same beach? That same turtle that's going to take a trip that's thousands of miles, the female turtles will wind up on the same beach where their mother was born. We can take blood from the sea turtle, and we can find out what beach that turtle was born on, because that little hatchling is going to go back to that same beach. But I find it absolutely amazing. How does that turtle know when it digs down and hits water that's going to hurt her eggs? Like I said,
they are magical creatures. I have a couple other questions, but we actually have one of our emailers has a really timely question. This email says, "Great guest. I've long been a long time admirer of Mr. Moretti and his crew. I find the sea turtles to be so fascinating. How are the turtles faring in the cold? Thank you for your amazing work." It says,
"Well, these turtles are cold blooded animals, and they're really smart. They're sort of like a lot of us. They'll go north in the summer. They'll get all the way up around North Carolina. They'll go all the way up off of Boston. We actually get turtles occasionally from Boston. The turtles will go north, and they'll chase the food source. And then when the water gets cold, they'll come back south. When you put a satellite tag on the turtles, you can actually watch it. In cold weather, it comes way back down, way underneath the Keys. And as soon as it gets really hot, they'll go north to find food, which is amazing. But they're cold-blooded animals, so they, whatever the temperature of the water is, that's the temperature of the turtle. And it seems somewhere around 55 degrees, the turtles start to collapse. So they'll go almost into a coma. They barely lift their head. They're floating on the surface. About 2 years ago, we had a cold snap, the first one ever to come down into the Keys. In record, we've never had turtles that actually stranded in the Keys. And it was happening further up north. It takes about 2 weeks of the water being cold to get the water temperature down in the mid-50s, and that's when we get in trouble. Fortunately, the Keys, that's only happened once in all of record history, and not too much in Florida because we're pretty warm here. But these
right, I think our person who sent that email was probably even asking about situationally, just with kind of a cold snap or two that we've had lately, how the turtles react at that moment.
I think the last turtles that stranded was that cold front that came through Florida, and it was up in the very top of the panhandle. 20 turtles stranded. They appear to be comatose on the surface, just floating, but they're savable. All you got to do is warm them up.
Okay. Well, that sounds simpler than I might have thought, so that's great. Yeah. Well, we're just sort of in the tail end of our time together, Richie, but let me ask you this. So whether it's a fiber papilloma or flotation issues, which maybe we'll come back to for another minute, or whatever brought the turtles to the Sea Turtle Hospital to begin with, what happens if they can't be released back into the wild? I know that's chiefly what happens, but some turtles I know also ultimately aren't able to be released into the wild. So what sort of conditions seem to account for that being unable to go back? And then where do they go in those instances where it's just not practical to send them back?
One of the biggest problems we've had, and we've been dealing with it for years, and those are the turtles that get hit by a boat. A lot of times a turtle will be floating because they have another problem, like an impaction, or just a turtle came up for a breath of air and gets hit by a boat. When they get a spinal cord injury, it appears that the turtles can't evacuate their lungs completely. I think Elliot Jacobson at the University of Florida put it best, is that, you know, with the spinal cord cut, we have problems with their bowels because they don't work as well, and it's the same thing. They can't evacuate all the air from their lungs, so they float. So what we do is we put weights on the back, and Tina Brown and I started that years ago, putting weights on them to make them comfortable. You couldn't release them that way. If the weight fell off, they'd be floating again. And we transferred them all over the world. 2 years ago, we took five of them to Great Britain. And we had one about 4 months ago, we took to Las Vegas, to the Bellagio. We had a turtle that was about 350 pounds and had lost one lung. So when it starts to swim hard, it overinflates the one lung it had, and it would float on the surface, and then it would get hit by a boat, so it couldn't be released back into the wild. So our tank, our large tank, was only 100,000 gallons, but the Bellagio had a tank that was 1.5 million gallons. So we have a big green sea turtle living in a casino in Vegas right now for the rest of his life. And when people take these turtles, it's a lifetime commitment, because that turtle's going to live another 60 years. And they're going to have to pay the vet bill. They're going to have to reattach the weights to it continually. But people are willing to do this, and I love it, because we wind up with turtles in an aquarium, and that way they don't have healthy ones there that can be released. They have our turtles that can't be released.
Yeah, right. And I imagine that doesn't take much for you to get over capacity at the hospital, so it's not practical for them to live out their lives there, I would think, in most cases.
Exactly. We keep about... I think we have about 12 or 15 that we've had for a long time. I think we have one. The oldest one came in 1989 and had taken the top of his shell off. And that was one turtle we watched it go from being about 6 inches across. It was a one-year-old turtle. When she got to be 21, 22, we always thought it was a girl. We called her Bubble Butt. And when she got to be 22, all of a sudden we had to call him Bubble Butt, because he all of a sudden grew a tail. A long one, which meant he was male. So we actually got to watch that turtle from that was 1 year old till it became up to sexual immaturity. And now he's a little aggressive. We have to put him in a tank by himself for about 3 months because he chases all the females around.
All right, go Bubble Butt. So, so Richie, we have just about reached the end of our time, but obviously, just from what you've described, anybody that's been aware of your operation otherwise knows that it's a huge ongoing thing with a lot of veterinarians that help out and volunteer their time and a bunch of other volunteers. But it also sounds like a very expensive operation to keep running. I mean, how is it funded? Is it? I know you mentioned earlier when we were talking about research that grants aren't really practical, but are there some grants or other funding that you receive from one organization or another?
No, actually, what we found a more way that fits my way of doing things. The motel and the video stores funded us for the first 20 years, and when I sold off the chain of video stores, I bought a strip club next door and turned it into a hospital. And then Wilma came along and put the motel out of business. We took the money from FEMA to fix the motel, and we fixed the hospital up. And for the last 7-8 years, we've been open to the public. And last year, we saw almost 75,000 people that came through the Turtle Hospital, and that's how we fund ourselves.
Well, that's great. So it's really largely self-sufficient, but I assume it is a 501c3, right? So I think if people were inclined to help out your efforts, they could go to the website, which is turtlehospital.org, and also help your efforts as well, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, everybody's been a great help. And the biggest battle I'm having right now, because I've been doing it 30 years, let's see, 30, and I retired at 40, makes me 70, trying to find a way to make it go on in perpetuity. And that's what we're working on right now to see that goes after me. I don't have any grandchildren, so all these turtles are my grandchildren. I want it to continue after me. And like I say, we have a lot of great help. In our town, I have Dr. Major, and he's a specialist in reptiles and turtles. So he's been working with us for the last 20 years. And like I said, we all have the same goal, is to make it go on forever. So we found a way to fund ourselves. No, we very seldom do we get any grants. People come through. They love what they do. Occasionally buy the T-shirt. And as I say, and that's enough to fund us. We're able to do things at a very high level. Whatever we need, whatever it comes up with, that we can buy, and that's great.
That's great. And sea turtles are blessed to have you. And let's hope there's another Richie Moretti waiting in the wings to take the reins. And we've been speaking with Richie Moretti from the Turtle Hospital. Again, the website is turtlehospital.org. Richie, thanks so much for your time today on Talking Animals. And again, thanks for all your great work for all those sea turtles over all these years.
Well, we love what we do, and I guess we do what we love better.
There you go. All right, thanks again. Take care now.
Okay.
All right. Let's step in now to the Talking Animals Comedy Corner. This is Richard Jenny with a piece I've always loved called Fred Robster on today's Comedy Corner on Talking Animals.
So I'm out last night at a famous restaurant. I don't know if I can mention the name on the album. It might not be nice. It rhymes with Fred Robster. And it's a great place to go. Just don't sit next to the tank where they keep the lobsters. Very depressing. Lobsters always have that look of, any word from the governor? That's why you have to have like 4 or 5 drinks and then order. Because once you're drunk, you don't care who you send to their death in a boiling pot. Now you're drunk and they're going, can we help you? And you got that Emperor of Rome attitude. Yes. Bring me the brown one. He amuses me. The impertinent one on the right. Seize him! Have him boiled immediately. Would you like a beverage? Wine! Bring me wine! Will there be anything else? Yes, find out why all the Romans in the movies have English accents. Quickly! It's so sad. They're like the only... Had a sign up, the lobsters were flowing in. How cool is that? Think about that. Let's say you're a lobster, right? You've never been on an airplane before. A fair assumption. What else can you think but you've won the lobster sweepstakes? You're on a plane, magazine, belt around the tail. Not bad. Not only am I getting a free trip, I'm earning valuable frequent lobster miles. Next thing you know, you're locked in a tank. Both your hands are tied. Everybody in the place is wearing a bib with your picture on the front of it. Travel agent right away. What happened to the friendly skies, huh? And they're one of the only animals that have to put up with being alive in the restaurant. If you go to a steakhouse, folks, no cow tank. You don't see them bring a live cow. What do you think of this one, buddy? This is the best cow we got. With a baked potato, I don't think you go wrong. Say the word, I got a gun, I'll blast the crap out of him right here. This is the best cow. Hey, put your head up. The hell's wrong with you? It's a customer. You want this job or don't you? Right, and there's the cow over there. Why don't you have a lobster? Why don't you have a lobster? And the lobster's going, why don't you mind your freaking business? The man has made his dinner selection, fat boy. Sir, if I may say so, a fine choice it was tonight. Now, thanks.
That was Richard Jenny, the late great Richard Jenny, with a piece called Fred Robster, taken from his album Greatest Bits. At the top of the show, I mentioned I'm broadcasting this morning from California. I flew out yesterday to speak at the memorial of a close family friend. Service was held last night. So I'm speaking with you this morning from a studio at KUCI, the station where I launched Talking Animals the better part of 11 years ago. My thanks to Kevin Stockdale and Heather McCoy here at KUCI, and Maria Oliver and Sheila Cowley back at WMNF for technical assistance. Greatly appreciate everyone's efforts and help and patience in making this happen. Right now, it's time for another animal song. This is Josh Turner with Alligator Stroll on Talking Animals.
Kissimmee River, and before I was one, my mama alligator said to me with a smile, let me show you how to walk in a particular style. You take a little bit of country and some slow rock and roll, and what you got going is the alligator stroll. Okay. I hold my head up high, I keep my feet on the ground, I never hurry, never worry as I'm strolling around. I can keep a certain tempo that is lazy and sweet, and I don't need shoes cause I've got alligator feet. Take a little bit of country and some slow rock and roll, and what you got going is the alligator stroll. I don't wanna fight, I don't wanna bite. I use my 75 teeth for a smile so bright. You can recognize me by my rose-colored
and shades as I make my strolling way through the Everglades. I'm strolling, still strolling. Yeah. Oh, 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 bless my soul. What we've got going is the alligator stroll. Left, right, left, right. I got a letter from my cousins in the Great Dismal Swamp. They said they want to teach me their alligator stomp. So I'm strolling that direction in the way that I do. I hope to reach the Carolinas by the time I'm 82. If you like a little country and some slow rock and roll, you can follow right behind me with the alligator stroll. Put on your shades. Looks good. Follow me. We're going left, right, left, right. Give a Hollywood smile with those teeth so white. Now stroll to the left, back, forth. Now we're strolling to the right. Step south, step north. Now we're strolling straight ahead in an alligator rope. And every now and then we do a little do-si-do. Hey, rock, roll, rock, roll all the way to Carolina with the alligator. I'm in no hurry.
All right. That was Josh Turner with Alligator Stroll on Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. Towards the end of the show, we'll play Name That Animal Tune. The winner will receive a copy of Wendy Kelly's book, Bougie and Me, Seven Lessons from the Dog Who Rescued Me. We'll get to that in a few moments here on Talking Animals. Right now, it's time for animal news and announcements. First of all, there's been a lot of coverage and then, of course, a lot of think pieces, essays, op-eds, whatever, related to this whole thing that I'm sure by now you've heard about where the Dallas Safari Club auctioned off a permit to hunt a black rhino in order to raise money for conservation of black rhinos. In fact, we've talked about it a little bit on the show before when the news first broke. So anyway, that auction has happened, and there are now various pleas to the person who won, Corey Knowlton, to not go ahead and take advantage of his right now, the auction off right to shoot the endangered black rhino. So just by way of sort of noting the interesting discussion that can be on this topic, there was an op-ed piece a few days ago in the LA Times by Carla Hall entitled Plea to Hunter Corey Knowlton, Don't Shoot the Endangered Black Rhino. And yesterday in the New York Times, there was an op-ed that had sort of an interesting take. I mean, it certainly wasn't pro Corey Knowlton shooting the black rhino, but it was a much more nuanced piece about some of the issues there, and especially in Namibia there where it's going to take place. So anyways, I would suggest tracking that down as well as the Carla Hall piece online if you haven't seen either of those. And meanwhile, there's ongoing discussion, sometimes very charged discussion, about the whole carriage horse situation, as we talked about on the show. Mayor de Blasio said one of his first agenda items was to ban carriage horses in New York City. And I noted a couple days ago that actor Liam Neeson has come out in support of having the carriage horses remain on the streets of New York. So someone has speculated that maybe that's partly because the carriage horse drivers are his compatriots from Ireland. Who knows? There may be other reasons as well. But certainly a number of celebrities that are in support of the ban, including Alec Baldwin, Mary Tyler Moore, Miley Cyrus, of all people, in Pink. So anyways, we'll track that as it unfolds. And back locally, just want to make one more reminder that the Humane Society of Tampa Bay, under the auspices of PetSmart Charities, has this fantastic deal. We can't tell you exactly how fantastic it is. We can't mention prices on the air, as you know. But to get either your male dog or cat fixed is currently an incredibly discounted rate. So, but not surprisingly, limited availability to get in on this. So Book your appointment ASAP. If it's not too late, call 813-870-3304 or go to HumaneSocietyTampa.org and see if you can get an appointment while that still is available. Well, I think maybe we'll hold the rest of these for next week. So I want to get into Name That Animal Tune. Going to do it a little bit differently today by email as opposed to by phone. But you are listening to Talking Animals, and the show website again is talkinganimals.net. And we urge you again to visit either our Talking Animals radio show Facebook page or our personal page, my personal page, to find the link to our tip jar where you can donate today in support of Talking Animals. Again, we got the membership drive starting in 3 weeks from yesterday, and 3 weeks from today we'll be raising money, but love to get a head start. So anything you can do to help us out in advance would be greatly, greatly appreciated. So right now, though, we're going to give you something. This is time for Name That Animal Tune. This is a giveaway. You do not need to be a WMNF member to win. And there'll be a prize, a copy of the book, Bougie and Me, Seven Lessons from the Dog Who Rescued Me by animal behaviorist Wendy Kelly. To the first person who emails talkinganimals@WMNF.org and correctly identifies this animal song, it's Name That Animal Tune on Talking Animals. Look forward to your emails identifying that. Meanwhile, we have just about reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals on WMNF Tampa. I'll be back next Wednesday, January 29th, with another edition. Hope you'll join me for that. Also, hope you visit our website, talkinganimals.net, where we make available all sorts of information, as well as archives and podcasts of past Talking Animals programs. We also have a link to the Talking Animals Facebook page, our Twitter feed, and more. Please like us on Facebook, the show, and or me personally. Follow us on Twitter. Nearly all of that can be found again at talkinganimals.net. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Again, thanks to one more time to Heather and Kevin at KUCI, Maria and Sheila at WMNF for making this edition of Talking Animals happen from Irvine, California. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. Alternative Radio is next on WMNF. We're closing out today's show with an animal song, sort of. By an animal band, sort of. Here's Loose Fur with Hey Chicken on WMNF, Tampa, Brandon, Clearwater, Largo, Weeki Wachee, and beyond. Thanks for listening. Speak to you again next Wednesday at 9 a.m. on Talking Animals. Thanks.